Welcome to On the Middle East. My name is Ambrin Zaman, and today I'll be discussing the stunning defeat of the ruling party in Sunday's local elections in Turkey. The main opposition Republican People's Party swept major cities and districts nationwide, achieving its highest result since elections in 1977 and overtaking President Recep Tayyip Erdogan's Justice and Development Party at the national level for the first time in 22 years. With us here to discuss the reasons for this upset and what it means going forward is veteran Turkish commentator Kadri Gürsel, who joins us today from Istanbul. Welcome to our program, Kadri Gürsel. It's wonderful to have you here with us today.
Thank you for having me.
So, Kadri, a really incredible result on Sunday. Why did this happen? Why did the AKP do so badly? And what does this mean for the future of the AKP and for President Recep Tayyip Erdogan?
Now, what has happened last Sunday is that this time there was no alliance at all.
And we're talking about the opposition, of course, just in case the audience.
There is an opposition, but we are talking about the opposition, but the opposition alliance is non-existent and was having a crisis of confidence, of course. But the secular society, or be it Republican society, decided to reunite its forces in one party, which is CHP, you know, the Republican People's Party. This outcome cannot be explained with only one factor. The second factor is that the AKP constituency was the absenteeism of the AKP constituency. I think this is great because two factors. On one hand, the secular society uniting its capacity in CHP. On the other hand, the conservative society partially distancing from the AKP, which is very consistent, I think, for many reasons. One reason is, you know, is the inflation, is the constant loss of purchase power of the population. We have to admit that Turkey is in an open-ended economic downturn since 2018, which is a very long period, unprecedented fact for Turkey. Turkey has never been engulfed in such a, you know, long-lived, lasting economic downturn. Some academics do refrain from calling it economic crisis because there is no, you know, the growth continues, but but the important segments of the society do experience a crisis-like situation in their daily life. Their bread is shrinking every day. The discontent is bigger than he anticipated, I think, he, Erdogan. Because of this discontent, these elections were not taking place for changing the central political power, and this was for the local, this was for the mayorship, mayoral election, local elections. I think the conservative constituency felt freer to send a warning message to Erdogan, and We will see whether Erdogan has the capacity to receive the message or any capacity to behave accordingly. I think he has no such capacities.
At this point, I'd just like to ask you a quick question about the Yeniden Refah Partisi, the new welfare party, which is the movement from which Erdogan originally sprung and is led by the son of his political mentor, Necmettin Erbakan. It seems that many of his own loyalists defected to that party in this election to signal their discontent. But going forward, do you believe that those defections may prove to be permanent and that this is indeed a problem for Erdogan going forward? What's happened there? Setting aside...
I think, yeah.
Okay, why?
Yeah, I think yes. I think the the defection is there to stay. At the end of this, you know, this 22 years in power and with a no-solution situation to the economic downturn, plus incapacity that he created in his foreign policy. For example, you know, this Erdogan's indifference, so-called indifference towards Israel, because the Islamist constituency sees it this way. You know, the reaction so far shown by Erdogan is seen insufficient, and thus there is a growing reaction. I think this defection is from the hardcore of the movement. I think it has to be seen as a terrifying moment or terrifying
development.
Yes, it has to be seen as a terrifying development because this is the very hardcore Islamist defecting from the party.
So can I just interrupt you there and ask you a follow-up question, Kadri? That being the case, are there reasons to believe that Erdogan's own leadership of the Islamist movement will be challenged within the AKP proper? Could this be the beginning of an unraveling of the party? Or can Erdogan, as he claimed in his balcony speech on the night of the election, can he turn things around? Because he was basically sending the message that, hey, okay, so we have a bit of a problem, but it doesn't really matter because I'm still the president. I've got 4 years ahead of me, no more elections, and I'll just fix this. Do you think that his own leadership will be challenged within the AK, or is the gravy train too sweet, too lucrative? Are people still around him making so much money and will continue to that they won't defect?
Subscribe to the second option because Erdogan controls the money and Erdogan owns the state, and AKP cadre, AKP militants are in the state. Otherwise, we cannot explain this growth in number of the people, individuals employed by the states in such a short period of time. You know, it's increased twofold. You know, there is a ballooning effect. So as long as the AKP and this political power controls the state and calls the shots about what kind of the amount of resources to be distributed and the receivers, who will receive what resources, this will continue. The leadership within the AKP, Erdogan's leadership within the AKP is not about being challenged. It's It's not easy to challenge his leadership. There is no any strong figure left within the AKP confident enough to challenge Erdogan's power within the party. Whereas the party, in fact, now is at the second, as a secondary factor. Now the state counts. Erdogan runs Turkey through the state, runs his party through the state. The state and the party is not amalgamated. The party has become the state. And
okay, so then why is the welfare party such a threat to him in that case?
Because there's a constant downturn in public support for Erdogan. November 2015, he received 49%. In 2023, now he's at 36. So it's a huge loss of public support. So he's on the brink, and then his only resource of legitimacy is the ballot box, and this is a major blow, a historical breakthrough for the opposition against Erdogan, a historical breakthrough for the opposition, because the game is played on an extremely uneven playing field.
Of course,
this is a textbook example of how, in competitive authoritarian regimes, opposition can or would score, and they did tremendously. It's an utterly and truly and utterly historical breakthrough for the opposition.
So
nothing will be this is irreversible, and I think the Yeniden Refah Partisi will continue to grow, but it has its own limits, of course, but it will continue to grow to a certain degree.
So what does Erdogan do then? Does he just allow the whole thing to come apart, or will he decide, okay, I can't risk this anymore, and double down on authoritarianism, start locking up more politicians?
Good question.
Yeah. What
Good
happens
question.
Next?
I think Erdogan finds itself in a total impasse. At what we are now, at the point, because if he softens up a little bit, he will lose, because there is no one particular example of authoritarian regimes having survived by softening up. Okay, there is no such an example. Softening up ends with losing power. It's not an option. Toughening its standing towards the opposition, escalating the crackdown, or creating a new wave of crackdown on the opposition, etc., will certainly aggravate his crisis.
Okay, so everyone is now focusing on this figure of Ekrem İmamoğlu, because we all know that Istanbul was sort of the big prize in this electoral race, and Erdogan was absolutely determined to win it back. Yet, curiously, he fielded a mediocre candidate. Do you agree with this sort of idea that from here on, what we have before us is a contest between Ekrem İmamoğlu and Recep Tayyip Erdogan, or are things slightly more complicated? Because after all, we do, as he said, Erdogan said, have 4 years before us. Stuff could happen within the CHP itself. We have this other figure Mansur Yavaş, who did amazingly well in Ankara with 60% of the vote, almost three times what his AK rival got. And then also this sort of leadership vacuum simmering on the nationalist right. And we all know, of course, that Mansur Yavaş, however much he wears a CHP hat, is ideologically more to the right, more of a nationalist, though firmly secular. So what kind of surprises, if that's what we can call them, await us? Or is it just going to be as straightforward as the commentariat seems to be suggesting?
Look, there is a third option for Erdoğan in between softening and toughening. Okay, it's Erdoğan is a master of dividing. He knows very well how to divide the opposition. He does it since the beginning, and he did well so far. And he has, all instruments. He controls the state, he controls the money, and he controls the judiciary, going into details. He controls the intelligence apparatus. So he has every, capacities to use for dividing the opposition, to drive a wedge in between people, to provoke some, to create a degeneration within the ranks of the opposition, and by using many tools. We don't know yet, but there are examples. So far, Ekrem İmamoğlu has important and important talents. I think Ekrem İmamoğlu is a brilliant politician. Brilliant politician. He's an organizer, very talented organizer, a good communicator, and younger than Mansur Yavaş. But yes, as the secular society, the discontent, the public discontent, regrouped its political expression by, it expressed himself in itself by sidelining the all other parties and giving support, enhancing and empowering the CHP as the main central political party. Now, CHP is a central party. The success of CHP is bigger than the success of Ekrem İmamoğlu, we have to
That's a
admit,
very
because
interesting point. Yes.
this success is widespread, is at nationwide level. Okay, what we have seen in Istanbul in 2019 and in 2024, last Sunday, has repeated itself in many places, in Turkey. And then the political map of Turkey has changed tremendously. And then the CHP administration has empowered itself thanks to to this outcome. Mansur Yavaş got 60% in Ankara, in the capital city of Turkey. 60% is enormous, is an enormous percentage. So all depends right now how the CHP will manage this complexity, this competition. Will there be a consensus on the future leadership of the party? Will there be a duality, like a president, a candidate for the presidency, and the chair of the party would be separated or not? And who will be the candidate for president? Who will run for presidency? These are questions waiting for an answer, but the answer has to come, because procrastination in such fields would lead to similar disasters. And the second challenge is, would CHP embrace this authoritarian setting of presidential system or not? This regime, the current regime, is tailored for Erdogan himself. And this tailoring, this setting, would turn the most democrat person on the earth to a dictator with all the authority and power the regime offers to the ruler. Any democrat, any lover of democracy, any politician sincerely engaged for the democratization of the country can find itself at the end of the day as a quasi dictator.
Yeah.
Okay.
True.
So this is a dilemma, and I am waiting for an answer, a quick answer from CHP, whether they will opt for a regime change or changing only Erdogan. And okay. This is the important dilemma.
Very important, critical question. So talking about that kind of change going forward, Erdogan has floated the idea of changing the constitution, basically to allow himself to run for a third time because it's not permitted on the current one.
Yes.
Either you change the constitution or you hold new elections, I believe, for him to be able to do that. So this brings in the whole issue of the Kurds and where they fit into this very complex picture. Can we talk about that a little bit? Of course, not forgetting what happened today in Van, where an elected mayor from the pro-Kurdish party was kicked out again without even being able to take office and replaced by a government administrator. What does that tell us about Erdogan's calculations? Will he turn to the Kurds, or will he just continue on his current path of allying himself to nationalists?
I think he will take the second way, I think, or the second. He will continue, because he gave the message in his Diyarbakir speech that he will not talk to Kurds, to the pro-Kurdish party, because of its links with the PKK, etc. Allegedly links with the PKK, we have to say, in the name of political correctness. I don't know, correctness. The problem with the Kurdish question of Turkey is that this question has been internationalized as a result of Turkey's Syria policy. And now this question has many partners. This question has many partners. Erbil is one partner. The US is the second one. Russia is the third one. Süleymaniye is the fourth one. Iran is the fifth one. And Turkey is also the master of the question, but the control of the question is now evading from its hands. So I think that even with the most sincere intentions of solving the question, Kurdish question, with its own capacity, Turkey cannot do that on its own. And when it does not do that on its own, this could not be a solutions serving to the best interests of Turks and Kurds. So it's an impasse, and it's a generational impasse, I think. At the end of the day, we found ourselves in this. It's a manageable situation, but I don't expect that the regime in Ankara would deny. You know, all the democratic outcome of the local elections by denying Kurds the local rule, the ruling themselves. Because they did so. It was a totalitarian response from Ankara, and now I think there will be a kind of a hybrid. Approach, tough and soft, together, within its own complexity. Erdogan would leave a open door for Kurds, and will not accede. I think will not use this policy of denial in excessive ways.
Final question. I know you have to run. Do you see Erdogan grooming anyone as a successor, particularly in the wake of Sunday's defeat? Will that process, if it exists, accelerate? And who might that successor be?
Well, there are potential candidates, which their names are circulating around. And there are some hopefuls. But I don't know who is the hopeful and who is the
real candidate,
preferred real candidate by Erdogan. Hakan Fidan's name is circulating. The son-in-law's name is circulating, and there is no third name. There is no third name left. So
that's an interesting.
It all depends, you know, because Erdogan ruled Turkey is a one-man rule, one single man, you know, one-man rule, am I correct? But we always with coalition, with coalitions, you know.
That's true.
He, coalitions. First,
and now the nationalists.
It's the Nationalist Party and some segments of the state, you know. Will there be a transitional period? Will there be a drastic passage to democracy or a transitional period through electoral ways? For example, the discussion, the choice between Mansur Yavaş and Ekrem İmamoğlu refers to this question, to this dilemma, and the choice in between Hakan Fidan or the son-in-law Bayraktar or any other third person also fits in this equation. So we have time, but Erdogan, only some health problems can prevent Erdogan from running for presidency in the next election. Only health problems
and constitutional problems.
No, there is no constitutional problem because the parliament can take the country into the early elections, and this early elections gives Erdogan the right to compete again for the fourth term.
Well, we'll be talking after those elections, if not sooner, Kadri Gürsel. Thank you so much for joining us here today.
Well, thank you for having me and pushing me.
I did have to beg, that's quite true. Okay, Kadri, thank you so much. And this brings us to the end of this episode of On the Middle East. Make sure to visit our website, www.middleeast.com. al-monitor.com for more in-depth and independent reporting on the region. Thank you and goodbye.